everyone, and welcome to episode 568 of the MTG Goldfish Podcast. I'm Seth, probably better known as Saffron Olive, and we have the full crew here this week, kicking things off with the owner of MTG Goldfish, Richard. How are you this fine Monday, Richard?
Good morning, Seth. Excited to review the past year to see if we were geniuses or clowns.
I have a hunch.
I'm excited and a little bit scared. We'll see how this goes. But we got another ghost in Crim. Good morning, Crim. How's it going today?
Oh, it is going well currently until we hear the playback of some of these clips. I'm just trying to dodge. Every year, I'm just trying to dodge Circle of Loyalty, like, part two. So,
I mean, it can't be any worse than that, right, Crim? There's no way. We predicted something worse than Circle of Loyalty this year. So, at least we have that we can hang our head on.
I think the Circle of Loyalty is worse by just how strong Eldraine originally was.
that's also true. So, today, if you haven't picked it up from our little gab here, we are going to be looking back on 2025 in Magic. It's been kind of a tradition. We're going to go back through some spoiler predictions and clips and just see what they look like now that we got some hindsight, now that we're getting to the end of the year. So that's going to be the cast for today, going back over 2025 Magic. Before we get into it, though, a reminder that today's show is brought to you by Card Conduit, and Card Conduit's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use their curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use our sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results and a fast payment when your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/mtggoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. Our show is also brought to you by Heavy Play Advanced Gaming Equipment. The ETB playmat features a unique folding design, allowing you to fit it into a standard laptop bag. It's available in a wide variety of colors and also with original art. Equipmag lets you snap all your gear onto your playmat to move between rounds. Not that you're going to need it, because you're going to be sitting at table one all night. So head over to heavyplay.com/mtggoldfish or use the code mtggoldfish at checkout to save 10% off. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And now it's time to look back on 2025 in Magic. Richard, you got the clips. You're running this one. Take it away.
All right. We had 6 sets this year, right? Aether Drift, Tarkir Dragonstorm, Final Fantasy, Edge of Eternities, Spider-Man, and Avatar, The Last Airbender. Our trusty editor, Niatuk, has graciously put together all these clips. We have not seen them, okay? But the general format is there will be a hit, something we got right, a miss, something we got wrong, and an omission, something we simply just did not talk about. That would also be a miss, right? But we just did not talk about it. Most clips are
softens
from podcasts. Yeah. We have some random clips from daily spoiler videos to single Seth out. That's all his fault. So let's get underway. Six set standard, you know.
Let's do it.
It was okay. Let's see how right or wrong we were. So we're gonna kick things off with the Fast and Furious plane Aether Drift. Remember? Yellow borders, cars go vroom, Hazoret, racing. Yeah,
that's I've tried to forget.
Yeah.
Okay.
Why don't you hit us with an Aether Drift card that actually matters?
Okay. Disclaimer, I low-key think the set sucks, so I got the leftovers that Crib and Seth didn't want to talk about.
Yeah, Richard did not actually contribute to the list too much. He was like, the set sucks, so me and Crib made the list, but Richard still has to read some of the cards.
All right, so, I mean, this card's reasonable. Ketramouse, the new Dawn, Orzhov Control on the menu.
When I think of standard, I think of these card advantage engines, like Unholy Annex, Caretaker's Talent. They're kind of the foundations of a lot of slower decks. Can Ketramouse be one of those? Can this be like one of those engines that like makes a deck around itself, essentially?
So Richard, it says it in jest, but I genuinely think it's cool. And I think this card has legs as long as you have a solid backup plan to red.
So yeah, I'm pretty hyped for this one.
My tier list stops here. So this is the one good card. And then we got like Verges and Lightning Strike and stuff like that. And if your deck is removal.deck plus card draw engine and a way to gain life afterwards, it's probably decent. But if you don't get straight up run over, I don't see you outgrinding this. This reminds me of Up the Beanstalk Omnath decks. I think this is the best card in the set, like, by far, ignoring Verges.
Wait.
Is that
is
a
this
hit?
Our hit or a miss?
Oh,
yeah.
No.
That was a hit.
Oh, my.
The answer was generous.
Because this card barely saw any play, right?
Yeah.
No,
it did more in Modern. It did more in Modern. Like, it still is kind of a Modern staple. And it's seen some standard play. What did it spawn, though?
I mean, it's still seeing play now, right? You're seeing, like, the Abzan decks that play whatever that giant split card is that eats two cards from the graveyard. I forgot the name for Murders. But it essentially has built Abzan control, or I've seen some Esper versions of it with, you know, Deadly Cover-Up or whatever.
Okay,
so
okay.
It did eventually get a build around, right? Like, people leaned into the Exile.
I guess the question is how much play does it have to see to count as a hit? Because, yes, people did build decks around it, and it does show up on occasion, and it was kind of the hot thing in Modern for a minute when it first released, although it's kind of been overshadowed now by Quantum Riddler. So I guess it's, like, kind of a hit. I guess you also got to agree on the
miss,
Ether.
Though.
You got to agree on the Ether Drift scale, too, where Richard was very right. The hit of that was the set did kind of suck. Like, there was not a lot of good cards to come out of Ether Drift.
Wait. See, this is where I was going to say it's a half miss.
Ooh.
Because I think Richard was right in that, yeah, this card was very good with spawn things, right? But if you actually look at everything that came from Aether Drift, Momentum Breaker, right? We had the Bobble, the whole self-bounce package came out of this. Then you also had Stock Up, which we just overlooked.
Stock Up's good.
Then Monument to Endurance. That's currently tier. That's like probably one of the stronger cards in that Is It Lessons deck, right? And we're ignoring the Verges. But the main thing here is those cards were in there, and those are Haymaker cards. And a Lumbering World Wagon, actually a popular card and very much so played. So I don't know. And I mean, and we see Repurposing Bay in the Jeskai Artifacts, Perilous Snare. So Aether Drift actually has a lot of playable cards.
Nah, all right. There's a few, but I still think, like,
there's a
if
few?
You compare it to the rest of the year, I feel like it's one of the least played sets of the year.
I think, like, you got Stock Up in there, man. Like,
there's
a lot.
Malt Tender.
They're not just, like, so, like, Momentum Breaker, I'm like, okay, that's kind of a role player, right? But, like, Stock Up, I think, you know, is actually extremely strong. And let's not forget the most important contribution. Yellow bordered cards.
Okay.
Yellow bordered cards.
The PP borders are brutal.
All right. let's go with the miss. What was the miss? Was it Stock Up? I don't even know what it was. Let's see what it is.
Well, okay. So the next card on this list, I think, is going to be one of the most popular cards going into the new set. It was Loot. Pathfinder, throw it down, swing, it gets four. If you as we had mentioned, obviously it's gonna just also get absurd value, right?
Obviously.
But as you have figured out, obviously, that everything goes, like, it is even better if it plays nicely with Agatha's Soul Cauldron.
I guess it's
Okay. What? Okay, I thought Krim was about to dunk us with the Stock Up, and we're gonna be like, "Yo, bro, that's just divination." Yeah. But Loot.
Yeah.
Hey. Oh. Early on, Loot, Agatha's Soul Cauldron. I was 50% right. Agatha's Soul Cauldron is busted.
And I think you also got a little wrecked, or we got a little wrecked by the fact that just, like, Phoebe came along. Like, it would be interesting to see. If Phoebe didn't break Cauldron, if Lou ever would have done anything with Cauldron, but just, like, not that long after this dropped, they eventually printed Phoebe, and it was just, like, the best thing to do with Cauldron, so no one bothered to play Lou.
I mean, I still think it's probably not good right
probably
now.
Probably not,
even with Phoebe gone. But
I was trying to be nice, but
that was the loot buff there, where Krim was incredibly obsessed about loot, thought that card was a lot better than it was. But then he moved on to Phoebe eventually.
Dude. Final it had Fantasy to be came good out. With Cauldron, Richard. With Cauldron.
It's the next Pikachu. It's the next Pikachu.
I mean, I still believe that.
Okay, Aether Drift Omission. This one comes from Daily Spoilers. What did we not talk about?
DACA, kind of interesting to me. I think this is just, like, the best divination ever. I don't know if it's enough better than divination to actually be playable, but I think it might be, like, at 3 mana, it is kind of slow, but going 5 cards deep and grabbing your top two, but I think this card could be playable in some sort of control deck. Maybe being sorcery speed is a deal breaker. That was part of the power of Memory Deluge, is leave up your mana on your opponent's end step. If you don't got to do anything, you cast it, find what you need for the next turn. So maybe being sorcery is too big of a downgrade, but I think this is worth keeping in mind just because seeing 5 cards and grabbing 2 is actually digging pretty deep. I mean that wasn't that bad. I mean, like, I should have been higher on it.
Is it divination? It's like
I did say the best divination of all time, but yeah, I definitely didn't make it sound like that was gonna be one of the best cards in Standard, and it also became like immediately a modern staple too. So yeah, a little bit off on that one.
No, okay. I mean, but I kind of could see where you were coming from, right? We just came from Memory Deluge and all of that world of Standard. I mean, sorcery speed is a real thing, right? So I understand where you're coming from. And I think we all kind of just overlooked how good that was going to be,
yeah,
right? Like, we knew it'd probably be playable, but to the levels that it's at now, I did not see.
I didn't expect that either.
I still don't understand that card too today. Right, if we're like, okay, well, guys, Standard is all one CMC cards, you're just double, triple spelling, and here you are spending 3 mana to, like, draw 2, like, how is this acceptable? And the answer is, because your 1 and 2 mana spells are so effective and they're putting your opponent on such the back foot, you have time to, like, you know, take a little time off and, like, gas up to, like, finish them off, right? Because remember, this is not, like, you're like, oh, it's a control card. You're like, oh, that makes sense, right? But no, right? It was one of the linchpins of Is It Cutter, one of the most aggressive decks out there, right? Because they applied so much pressure, they can just be like, yo, all right, I'm just going to refill and then finish you off next turn, right? Like, no problem, right? So it's kind of, like, crazy that this super slow card works in such, like, a fast, like, efficient and aggressive meta. So
yeah,
and then it's like, it's the so super deep. Uncommon too, right? It's so expensive for an uncommon.
It's like almost $10. It's very,
it's literally your
bucks.
Hit when you're ripping Aether Drift packs. You're like, please, please stock up. You know what is this garbage $1 mythic? No, uncommon stock ups, please.
It is currently the 4th most expensive card in Aether Drift. Yes,
blows my mind.
I mean, yeah, that's wild. That card is so sweet, and it digs so deep that it allows you, like, to go find a bunch of singletons if your deck is loaded with them in Standard. So,
yeah.
All right, so we finished our race through
right,
through the
survived.
Multiverse, and back to everyone's favorite. I think a lot of people thought this was the cleansing of Universes Beyond and Aether Drift right after, like, Murders and Outlaws, Tarkir Dragonstorm, back to basics.
So good.
Original Dragons. Let's see what our hit was.
To number 3 on our list, we got a card that probably sees play even outside of Standard, I think, in Voice of Victory. I think the most exciting part about this card is, unlike previous versions, we've gotten this effect in the past, but it's always been attached to pretty bad creatures. Voice of Victory is a legit card. It's a 2-drop that actually attacks for 3, but I think this is also, like, if you want this effect and you want to protect your combo, in the running all the way back to probably Modern and definitely Commander 2, that's just, like, a really good card overall. But what do you think about this one, Krim?
I mean, it's just a power creep Grand Abolisher, right? Like, this is, I get that, like, yeah, Grand Abolisher is a few more things your opponents can't do, but, like, the main thing I care about, at least in this Standard, is their casting spells.
Yeah. How often does activating ability during your opponent's turn, like, I feel like that mode doesn't come up all that often, so I feel like most of the time it should be similar, right?
Who knows, Seth? Because, you know, we have the cauldron still. As long as Agatha's cauldron exists,
man,
in
where
standard,
were we?
There's always a chance for some broken combo that activated ability.
Voice of Victory.
Can we just acknowledge how crazy this, like, this Standard life cycle has been? We went from a hyper aggro one into a cauldron, dude.
It has been a wild year in Standard. I will say, this was our hit, and I came away from hearing that feeling like we still underrated it, because, like, I think it was even better than we gave it credit for, and we ranked it, like, number 3 on our list. We were very high in the card, but Voice of Victory, if you actually look at the amount of play it's seeing, It's like very good in standard. It's become a modern staple. It's showing up in legacy decks. It's a dual commander staple. The card, I think, is even better than that ranking. It probably should have been the number one card from the set, honestly.
100%. It's even coming out of like the sideboard for control decks, right? So the control mirror and things like that. So every deck that just has white mana wants to play it in some capacity.
It's so good.
I think it's better Grand Abolisher because it's not double white. Like, yes, it does less things, but it's like a legitimate clock, right? Like, three damage a turn is 50% more damage than two damage a turn, right? So, it's pretty good.
And the tokens did more than we actually gave it credit for, not just in the damage aspect, but like the way you spawn the two tokens, you could sack the token, you know, you can do whatever
Sephiroth,
you need to with them.
Shenanigans, mobilize stuff. Yep.
All right. Our miss of the year.
Well, let's keep moving on. Number six on our list, we have a dragon. We are hyped for Magmatic Hellkite. Krim, why don't you tell us about this stunning dragon?
It's actually a relatively cheap costing dragon, right? It's two red. It's a 4/5. The land that comes back has a stun counter on it. That is a huge tempo play.
Huge.
Right? Like, you are getting a body. You are setting them back a land for a turn. I think this has some big plays to be made, right? This is one of the cute tricks that I wanted to do with a Siege Chicken, right? Because it was one of the non-legendary, like, things.
Oh, right, yeah.
That was a meme.
Okay. Okay. Wait.
Okay.
What?
Hold on.
I wasn't even here for this podcast. What? You thought a 4-mana 4/5 flying?
Okay, but hear me out. I think this card still has legs. That's the thing. It's only that right now the meta has a lot of basic lands, right? If it were for the fact that, like, if we just had, like, a bunch of non-basics running around, I think this card would still be very strong.
I still feel like the card's not bad. Should we have had it on our top 10 list? Maybe not. It probably shouldn't have made the top 10 with hindsight, for sure. But, it still seems like a reasonable card. I agree that it's bad in the meta, although the other side of that is we have infinite red decks in the meta right now that could be playing this card because Izzet's everywhere and so forth, and no one still plays it. So I don't know. It's going to be a standard.
The mana base doesn't matter right now, right? Like, everyone's playing basic lands,
except
for the four-color deck.
By fetching a basic. So it's really hard to get them off their colors, unless they're literally playing a Towns deck or something that needs all the types, you know, like if it was Maze's End meta. But, like, your opponent loses a mana next turn, but you kind of took the turn off by playing a 4-mana 4/5 flying. Like, so hindsight is 20/20, but... Bro,
I'll have you know, this card 5-0'd a league recently, too, because of Momo, all right? I'm just saying.
Like, there are dragon decks in standard, right? We play decks with the dragon package, but, like, this card is not seen anywhere.
I wouldn't be surprised if we underrated or overrated a lot of, like, 4-drops, because I feel like in my Magic brain, I think of 4-mana as being relatively cheap and standard playable, but I think with how much more powerful standard's gotten, 4-mana is actually... much tougher for a lot of decks to play. You got to be really good to break in as a 4-drop now.
We should do a podcast of overrated 4-drop. This has gone on since the beginning of time. Remember, what was it? Like Reaper of the Wild? It's like the Golgari thing. It was like a 4-mana 4-5.
Hey, that was played as a
like
single.
Like Polyphronosis, like Cerberus. Wait, was that a 5-drop?
Right.
I don't remember. But
Cerberus was 5, but yeah.
These like 4 5-drops that have so much text on them, you're like, surely.
It's gotta
it must be good.
This is the one.
And apparently since as early as 15 years ago, like the game ended by turn 4. Like this better have been like a game-ending threat. Otherwise, it's like complete rubbish, right? So, yeah. our omission. Hori Steel Cutter.
Oh, God. Yeah, it's Bitter Blossom, Krim. It's basically Bitter Blossom. Maybe better Bitter Blossom.
God. Erase this.
What is this card's name? Hold on.
Hori
C-O-R-I-Cutter.
Krim, did you know the respect to look it up, sir?
Is this card not insane? I feel like I would play this card if it was not an equipment. If it was just a static artifact, I feel like that would be playable. And then I can like put it on a creature and give haste and trample, maybe for free when I make a monk. This card seems wild to me. The question I have is, where do you play it? That's my only chance. I feel like this is a powerful card, but like aggro, you run out of cards, so you can't double spell through the whole game. Maybe like an Oculus Talus build, some sort of straight up flurry build where you're all about casting two spells a turn, Spellslinger, like those are the homes I would see, but I don't know exactly where it fits, but I feel like this card's strong.
I think it looks like Mentor or Young Pyromancer, right? But I think it sucks. Right? Because two mana, you play it, you have no board. You need to untap, and then you need to play two spells, which is not as common as you think, right? Because usually you play on curve, right? So, like, you're playing two spells. It's not like Monastery. Like, Monastery Mentor is, like, five levels above this card, I feel like. Because that's a body, some other bodies, it grows, it's a finisher. You know, one card will make it go. This thing, it's like a three-card combo minimum. You got to play this, you got to play double spell the next turn, double spell on three mana, like, what are you casting, really? Like, it's, oh, God, we got to cut it off there. Oh, God. What world were we in? We were like, it's hard to double spell?
Yeah.
Woo! Yeah, I think that was a generational miss there. I think we could, if we had, like, top 10 misses of, like, you know, the decade, I think that would be one of the inclusions there.
I think it would make the list for sure. Yeah. Grim having to what card? Corey C O R I having to like type it in cracked me up so much. That was so good.
I know the name now, by the way.
I mean, I think I was highest on it and I still didn't come close to giving it as much praise as I should have.
I think I remember, I swear, there's somewhere in there I should have responded with, oh, wait, hold on. I played with this card. This card is decent. I know decent is an understatement, but like, hey.
We'll have to go back and listen to the whole cast. These are just little clips, so I'm sure you probably got to that eventually.
I mean, it's easy in hindsight. Like, we missed a lot of things, right? Like, we compared it to Mentor and Pyro, but this card is actually way better than those cards. Like, the tokens having prowess is a big deal. And the fact that the equipment gives trample and haste and it equips to the new token gives you a lot of rush damage in addition to like just the cheese of like putting it on like an otter or something and then just like trampling your way in for the win. And I don't know why we thought it was hard to double spell. And I'm pretty sure I know why we thought it was hard because we put the same argument against Tiger Seal. Right, we're like Tiger Seal. There's no way you keep double spelling the whole game, right? Like, oh no, yes you can. So
I like Tiger Seal.
Yeah, I think we were corrupted by Bitter Blossom. We thought it was just a 1/1 flyer, but in actuality, they are hasty prowess monks coming in, and the Izzet Shell is so strong that even without Steel Cutter, it lives on. Right, so Steel Cutter just made it insane. Steel Cutter into Steel Cutter Opt. Insane, right? Like you're so dead so fast,
so brutal.
Right?
So yeah. Brutal. I mean, the card's a modern staple. Like that's how good it ended up being.
All right. And then the biggest set of the year, Final Fantasy. If you remember the quest for the golden chocobos, collector boosters hitting like $1,000, and we're like, oh, there's no way, right? But they kept going. Brought in all these longtime players or new players, which have since disappeared, like people predicted. But still, probably like set of the year, right? Like if we had to rank all these sets, like Final Fantasy would be the breakout, right? Breaking sales records in one day. Let's see if we were able to get the hits.
Vivi, I think we got to mention just because a lot of people are hyped for it. I'm still kind of a skeptic that it's going to be fast enough in the cutter decks, but we'll say, Richard, you're the aggro expert. You're the cutter player. What do you think of Eevee? Is it going to be adopted in the prowess deck?
You guys listed non-red cards. You guys smoke and crack. Like the two best cards in standard are Corey Steel Cutter and Monstrous Rage. Okay.
Yep.
Eevee goes straight in there. Do you want Dark Ritual in the format? Hello, Monstrous Rage onto BG. Dark Ritual, right? What more do you want, right? And like,
yeah,
it's so good, right? I think BB is by far the cutest, most gruesome, disgusting card you see. Okay, like look at this art, and then it's gonna maul you like every single turn. Everyone's like, ban BB.
All right. Yeah, maybe.
and you have the shell of the rest of the deck. You have, you don't draw your VV, Steel Cutter, Monstrous Rage, getting it done anyway. Right? So,
yeah. Yep.
And it's permanent too. It's like you just get a +1/+1 counter. So even if you somehow didn't die the turn they popped up with VV, you're like, Okay, there's like a 3-6 sitting here, a 4-7 sitting here now I need to kill. Otherwise, they untap and have infinite mana again. Which is actually relevant because then you can activate the otter thing.
The, oh, right.
Right, to get back a spell, thing. To pass another talent, another stock up or off or whatever, right? So you have a mana sink in that deck as well. So when you pop off hard, you pop off even harder, so...
Richard has actually just built the best deck in Standard on the podcast.
We redeemed ourselves.
Yeah, you nailed it. Like, I think if you go back and look at, like, spoiler videos and my social media, I think I was actually way more skeptical about it than I sounded there. So I think you actually kind of carried on this one. It made me not look as bad, because I definitely remember thinking that it wasn't going to be fast enough for the prowess deck. And then it ended up being BV and just breaking everything.
You know what's funny? We mentioned three banned cards in the same deck right there, right? Is it Steel Cutter, Monstrous Rage, yep, and Vivi, right? Yeah. Like, what a time to be...
What a year.
What a time to be alive, you know?
And that, after all of those rounds of bannings, the deck, the Is It Shell is still good.
It's still Is It Cauldron, right? Like,
it's
is it losing
good
the same shell without
decks.
These two?
Yeah. Yeah, it's wild.
All right. What was our miss from Final Fantasy?
Individually, the adventure towns that become a land.
Oh.
I think Lindblom and Midgar are actually playable. And very, very likely to see some amount of play.
I will say, I've been brewing a lot of decks because we got early access coming up. But I have found that they are cards that I like a lot, but only in specific decks. Like, I built a lot of red decks without Lindblom. I built a lot of black decks without Midgar. But then I built, like, a Sack deck. And Midgar is an easy four of one of the cards I was most hyped to put in the deck. I built, like, a Wizards deck. And Lindblom's one of the best cards, one of the best lands in that entire deck. So I think that's where I'm at with them. I think they're really good. Although I don't think any of them are, like, if you're playing the colors, you automatically play the land. So that's kind of where I see them for Standard.
You're probably kind of half right.
You don't get murdered by it.
If you're playing a wizard
Richard,
deck,
cool at all, but like a tap land, like that's like with how fast we are, and maybe because I play too much Steel Cutter, but I'm like, there's never a time to play a tap land because you're trying to double spell. So like there's no like off turn, and then if you actually need to play one on your curve, you're just giga dead. I'm curious if we get slower though, like if the format just slows down somehow, but I don't see anything slowing down. It gets even faster from all the cards I see here with, like, Tifa, Cecil. Like, all these cards just speed up the format even more, right? Like, we're not... I don't see any, like, crazy stabilizing card.
Altama. Richard, you nailed it. Like, I think I'm just too MDFC-pilled for my own good when it comes to these cards, because I see something that looks like MDFC, and I'm like, oh, my God, they're going to be so good. But you are 100% right that they come into play tapped, and you just... You can't get away with that anymore. Like, maybe in, like, even in control decks, it's hard to get away with playing too many tap lands. And in anything outside of that, it's so tough. And those cards ended up not just being way worse than I thought, but now I think they downright suck. Like, I don't even play my commander decks anymore, let alone try to put them in standard decks.
I still play them in commander, but I think you can play a lot in commander. I do think, though, like, that was the big deal, right? Like, I mean, I don't think that you can really afford to play any tap lands. So,
yeah,
it's funny because after playing so much limited, like these cards barely make the cut in limited. I'm like, you know, you open this as your rare, like, oh my god, only the green one is good. Because the rest of these effects are so middling, right? Like three mana to make a black mage token, like that is not really worth it. Like, yes, you will take it if it's free. So, like as a late pick in limited, but you're not happy with a high pick, and if you're not happy with the high pick in limited, there's no way you're happy in standard with these things, right? So, and then we never had a real mill deck, so the blue one never had a chance. The black one, I could see if Sephiroth actually became a thing, you might actually play that one. But the rest of them, like the white one is too slow, the red one like kind of does nothing, green one too slow. So it was all on Sephiroth, and Sephiroth never really happened, so...
I built the Sephiroth deck with four of those cards, and I played it, and then I went down to three, and and then zero. Like, I don't even think it's good enough for Sephiroth, honestly. Or at least that's been my experience. The Tapland's just still too punishing, even in its best home.
Yeah. All right. And our Final Fantasy omission is...
Next up, we get another mono green Esper card. Just weird Final Fantasy things. An Esper Origin slash Summon Esper Bonded. I'm really not sure how good this is. Oh. The front side, it is important to point out, it just surveils two and gains two. It doesn't immediately replace itself. So I don't think the front side of this card is actually good enough to see play. The back side is legitimately good if you can hit all the modes. So I think the Saga creature is actually pretty good, but is it good if you have to spend 4 mana on it? Like, if you have to spend 2 mana for the underpowered front side and then 4 mana to flash it back to get the back side, that seems like a lot of hoops to jump through for a card that's kind of like okay but not super busted. Probably the
wait, where does the C play? Why is this an omission?
Where is this good? It's in the Sultai deck. It's in the Naya Yuna deck.
It shows up in a lot of Steel Gary Dragons, some of the reanimator builds. It basically, if you're doing graveyard shenanigans, it ended up being like kind of a staple. I think where I went wrong there is I think I just underestimated, like, actually, I'm not even sure. Like, the graveyard filling? Like, I'm still, like, when I read the front side of that card, I'm still, like, you're paying, like, 2 mana to surveil to and gain to, which is just not very good. And the backside, still, it's not, like, busted, but it's fine. I think it's just, like, underestimating the power of being 2 cards in 1 and the fact that you, like, essentially get two pieces of cardboard out of 1 card in your deck, and that's just an inherently powerful mechanic.
Yeah. And then, like... Yeah, it's real awkward because then, yeah, when they flip it over and they get to the backside, it's just so much value when it hits the board.
You draw a card with the first floor counter, and then you pressure this, like, trample turn with the overrun, which often means you have to kill it, even though it's going to go away the next turn because the overrun might kill you, so you got to waste a removal spell. So all the little things, like, add up to making it a very good, like, graveyard mid-range style card, and I was just way too low on it.
I think still we had a lot of omissions, though, from this set. When it comes to, like, what was in standard, right? Because I don't think any of us saw, like, Cecil being, like, the go-to, like, one drop in black, right? Did we even, like, talk about Traveling Chocobo? I don't even think we did, right?
I don't remember. I know that's in one deck,
but...
We get too many sets these days for me to remember everything we talked about. But, yeah, I think there were more omissions, for sure.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you're not supposed to cast the front side of this card. You're supposed to just, like, surveil it, dump it in your yard, and then it's a free roll to later on just, like, 4-drop play it. But interesting. Interesting, like, the summons as a whole didn't do much, right? If you think about all of the summons. Like, I guess we did have, like, the reanimator deck. Yeah, but it was a cool take on a new mechanic. That's one of the things we appreciate. Like, it was a summon creature. It felt very Final Fantasy. It was a new thing. So now we have a little intermission. We had a little ban list update. So I guess at this point we've been going on with the Is It deck for a while. I think this is Steel Cutter's time to be reined in. Let's see what we predicted in our ban list prediction.
So let's wrap things up today by sharing the cards that I would ban if I was in charge, and then what I think Wizards is going to do on Monday, as far as what I would do. So I would start by knocking out the big 3 red cards of Cori Steelcutter, Monstrous Rage, and Manifold Mouse. And I'd hit on missions 2 on the theory that it's better to be on the payoff than the support card so Wizards can keep printing enchantment reanimation in the future. I'd be tempted to add Vivi here too, just because I'm worried that in 6 months it might dominate the format, although in reality, it's just too early to ban anything from Final Fantasy, no matter how scary the card might look. I would also ban Up the Beanstalk, not because it's too good right at this moment, or because it's guaranteed to be too good in the future, but because there's some chance it's going to be too good in the future, and its original design was to leave standard this summer anyway. As for what I think Wizards will do, the 2 cards that I think are more or less guaranteed to be banned are Cori Steelcutter and Monstrous Rage. I also think that it's more likely than not something from Omniscience gets targeted, especially now that current builds don't really lose anything meaningful at rotation situation outside a temporary lockdown. And if mice and prowess are nerfed, lockdown becomes less important anyway. I also can't shake the feeling that Storm Chaser's talent is much higher on Wizard's list of potential ban targets than it is on the community's list. I'd still say the odds are against the banning, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was one of the cards that got a lot of internal discussion at WotC during the banning process. I also imagine that banning Vivi is a non-starter for Wizards, but after this weekend, I wouldn't be surprised to see Vivi at the top of the list next year when we're talking about what should be banned in Standard. Taking this together...
All right, so Seth pretty much nailed it, right? So,
I was
so
actually
in that,
pretty good.
In that ban list, Vivi was spared. Monstrous Rage, Steel Cutter. What was the mouse card, though?
They went with Heartfire Hero instead of Manifold Mouse. So I got the wrong mouse. And then I didn't predict the Southbound stuff. I didn't predict Hopeless Nightmare. That's the other one I missed. But I will say I actually feel pretty good about that overall. Like, more or less, that was pretty close to what they ended up doing. And even the Vivi being a problem 6 months from now. I think that even down to the date, it was pretty much 6 months later they banned Vivi.
Yeah, that was very spot on.
Wait, Up the Beanstalk was banned in that exact one, right?
Yeah, I think Up the Beanstalk was also banned in that one. Yeah.
What a stand. Look at how many cards we banned. Oh, and I think there's a strong case for every card that Seth listed to be banned at that point of time. And even now, like, I'm like, Storm Chaser talent can go, like, Omniscience pieces can go. It's kind of crazy.
I still wish they banned Omniscience instead of Baylo's Awakening. I still feel like that was a mistake with hindsight now, because Omniscience has still, like, been good. So I think they went the wrong direction on that one. But, yeah, I'm pretty happy with that.
All right. So now we go to our space opera set. Mm. So this is before we knew that Star Trek was being revealed, right? So everyone thought this was going to actually be Star Wars. But it actually wasn't, right? It was actually kind of its own little space set. So let's see what our hits were.
All right, let's go to a card that I know Richard likes. Nova Hellkite. I think this card obviously reads really strong. My only worry is, where does it fit in the current crop of red decks? Like, we got a lot of prowess decks that are slinging spells. We got Screaming Nemesis. Does it, like, just where does it find room in those decks? So I think this card's really good. I'm just not sure exactly where you play it, but what do you guys think about this card?
It makes its own archetype. Red deck wins.
It's so good. Innovative new archetype.
Maybe you shy away from Slick Shot. Like, okay, let's say mono red is like crazy. Okay, and then everyone's like high noon in the sideboard, and you're like, bam, Nova Hellkite, right? I don't know. But I feel this is so much damage on a single, like, this is a mull to four, I won the game story, right? Because it was three lands and two Nova Hellkites and a bolt or something, and you won the game, right? Like, it's so much damage and so card efficient. Yep. I feel it will eventually see play. If not immediately, like, you'll eventually find a way to make this work. Kind of.
I do not know if this is a card you want to play in red, actually. Like, as in mono red. Just because I really like the card, but I don't know if this is a mono red card, because mono red doesn't want to clunk up the deck with a bunch of now three drops. Right? Because, like, and then Screaming Nemesis is just too good. Now,
with all the bannings, surely we can play cards above three mana value now, right? Like,
if
you're playing a four mana spell, you're not a ramp deck. You're just like a normal deck, right? Surely we return to that, right? Like, you could play eight three drops. Like,
I mean,
be like an aggressive red deck. It's not big red per se, but it's not like turn three all in aggro combo, right? Like, you can just go a bit slower. Wait, was this a hit?
Is this a miss or a hit?
Richard that was listed super as a correct.
Hit. I mean, we kind of saw it, but it's like, not, it's like dominating.
It's but, like but a four only... of in mono red today. Like, it's
wait,
well,
is
today
it?
Because
yeah, it's
don't...
like a four of in mono red. Yeah, that's one of the big cards in the deck. So I think like
only,
I think you
only
ended up being
because
right on
the
it.
Bannings.
That is true. I was gonna say that. Right? I think in our defense, Grim. We were coming off of, like, the turn three win red decks with Monstrous Rage, when legitimately you wouldn't play anything that costs more than three mana, and you wouldn't even play many three drops other than Screaming Nemesis. So I think that that's how we were thinking of red at the time, and then it ended up slowing down a little bit with the bannings, enough that you could play Nova Hellkite and made Richard super right.
Yes, eventually Richard would be right. Yes,
I didn't even realize they played it today, because in my mind, it's like the mono red that was anti-VV tech, right? And they did not. Play it back then because we were so fast, but yeah, it's slowed down enough that you can play it.
You can play it, and it's pretty good.
I mean, I still play it in my actual paper standard deck. I actually bought the alternate versions, and I play it. And though I played my paper standard deck zero times, thank you very much.
what is your deck? Rakdos? Yeah.
I'm playing Rakdos. I need to update it. I can get multiversal passages now, because I refused to buy starting towns at that point. It was like $30. I can have some budget updates to play in the zero RCs and store championships that have happened around my area.
Passage is not cheap.
Yeah, I would hate to bring it to you, Richard, but I think Passage is still like $16 a copy. So.
Oh, well, that's better than 30, but I guess it's Temples of Abandon or whatever for me, right? Whatever the Temple of Malice, I guess, for me, for my high stakes paper standard matches. All right. Okay, first omission.
A Mythic Warper. This is Quantum Riddler. This card really intrigues me. So on one hand, it's kind of the closest thing we've seen to a Muldrifter with the warp mechanic so far, is this blue flyer that draws cards when it enters. Its last ability, about having one or fewer cards in hand, that one I'm kind of like, I don't know how often that's going to come up. We had like Flail of Galadriel in Lord of the Rings sets that kind of does something similar. And it turns out that most blue decks that are playing cards like Sphinx and drawing a bunch of cards are just not going to end up with one or fewer cards in hand very often. So to me, that reads like some weird combo potential where in some rare situations, you're going to draw an extra card, but it's not going to come up that much. So Quantum Riddler, I like this card. I'm not sure exactly where it fits, though. It's got cool stats, relatively good for stationing up spacecraft or planets because of its high power. You can warp it on the cheap, start getting some counters on things. So I think it's more of a synergy piece. ETB draw card is fine. I'm just not sure how often that last ability is going to matter. Outside of some weird combo situations, I guess you can one with nothing yourself to draw an additional card or whatever. But in reality,
one with nothing to draw an additional card.
He said about the best card in Modern, yes. it turns out that Quantum Riddler is actually really, really good. And you do sometimes draw two cards with it, although that part really doesn't matter. But I think what I underestimated was just like some of the scam potential in synergy of the warp mechanic, just warping for two and then being able to blink it. We see that in Standard. We see it in Modern. The warp mechanic just played way better than I imagined it playing. So I think that's what I mostly missed on there. And yeah, Quantum Riddler, definitely like top 10 card of the year by far. Like counting all the sets, it would be one of my top 10 cards of the year.
Following probably the one of my favorites, if not my favorite mechanics of the year, like Warp.
Oh, Warp's like, really good.
I think Warp, like you said, played real nice.
Yeah. No, Warp ended up being one of my favorite mechanics this year, too. I really like the Avatar mechanics, but outside of the Avatar mechanics, Warp is one of my favorites. Yeah.
It's just funny that we thought we were going to warp to station.
It could happen still.
How do you feel about that? I feel like each set should have a marquee mechanic. Right? And is warp supposed to be the marquee mechanic of Edge? Because I feel like station is supposed to be it, right? So if you want to make one that's actually played, it should be station instead of warp. But yeah. I don't know. But I guess it's better than not seeing play at all. But where's the station? Like we should be readying our battleships. You know, the alarm should be going off. Our little tokens should be running into our station lands. But like that never really happened, so it really never got that kind of like fantasy aspect going, right?
It didn't really even happen in Commander for the most part. Like, yeah, you see the land cycle a bit, but like as far as playing spacecraft, like you don't really even play them that much in Commander. So yeah, I wish there was more of it personally. But what were you gonna say, Ken?
Let's not omit though Kona, right? We are omitting the station lands are good mostly for the tapping the turn it comes down. But I do think that I would actually like to see the reason why you station matter, right? Other than just tapping stuff down as soon as you can.
Yeah, I would say in Commander, they're played just for the crew ability. Again, like Kona, right? You just need a way to tap your commander or to tap some key card rather than caring about what happens when your space station comes online, which I think is kind of a fail.
I bet the Star Trek one's going to be busted, the spacecraft from that set. I bet this was like the kind of the meek little intro so we can feel it out. And then once we go to Star Trek, they're probably going to be insane.
I mean, they've got it, right? They've got at least... I think it's because station costs so much, right? Like, the planets were 12 plus in power.
The numbers
so that's like
were very high.
A lot of turns, and it was very safe. So...
All right. Well, we have a second emission. What is this?
Oh. We also got a new green mythic, an Ouroboroid. Oh. Sits on the battlefield, grows your entire team each turn, and because it's 2025, it snowballs. It grows itself each turn. So we've never really seen a card that does this before. Ouroboroid is just the best of all worlds. It puts counters on all your creatures the turn that it comes down and every turn after that, and it triggers based on its power, which opens up some shenanigans. So if this card's going to see play, I would expect it to be some sort of plus one counter deck. And once you throw in the synergies of like bristly build to double counters and so forth, stuff can get out of hand pretty quickly. So it's going to be interesting to see what this does in a counters deck. The other way you can build around this is just use pump spells to speed it up. So this card just has so many shenanigans. Yes, a lot of them are win more, but
a true win more.
Yeah, a little win more. In my
technically
defense, Benjamin Cup didn't exist back then.
Yeah,
but yes, like some of the fast mana that really made it so strong wasn't really a thing when Edge came out. But yes, it definitely way better than it made it sound. No doubt about that.
Yeah, I think. I don't know if this even counts. I feel it's replaceable. Like, it's just like a finisher. You know what I mean? Like, the heart of the deck is the Badgermole Cub, right? And the Badgermole Cub lets you spew some random stuff up. So if you, for whatever reason, banned this card, you just put another big, scary, you know, one of the four drops that we overrate crazy, right? Like, when they come in, like, early, then, yeah, they're not overrated, right? So, yes, it saw play. It sees play today. But I feel it's one of the more replaceable parts that you can replace it with any kind of big, baddie, four-drop, mythic-y thing. And, like, it'll probably do the same. So,
really? Yeah. I think this card is, like, irreplaceable. It's, like, the closer for your deck, right? That's like, I don't know. I feel like that's playing blue-white control without Sphinx's Rep. I think you need... Like,
do you
what?
Need Sphinx's Rep for blue-white control, though?
Yeah, you do. You
would Blue Sun Zenith not basically do the same thing? Like,
no, that's, you already know that's not the same.
I think it is the best. It is the best finisher. I think you would lose a lot if you drop down to whatever the next best thing is. Although, on the other hand, like... I won with Shrines with Badgermole Cub. So I know that, like, the power of the fast mana can let you win with some pretty bad things, like, objectively. But I do think Ouroboroid is, like, legitimately a good card. And I was too low on it, for sure.
Badgermole Cub and, get this, Ouroboroid are just both good cards. Badgermole Cub can allow you to do nonsense, yes, because it itself is very strong. But I think that Ouroboroid is just a haymaker and, like, probably the finisher in green. Like, that if... We meme on Mono Green for a long time on this podcast because it's been bad for a while. And I think that if you are going to build a Mono Green deck, it starts with Ouroboroid and Badgermole Cup. And then whatever else you can fill in the blank spaces.
Yeah. I mean, it started with Tifa, agree with that, right? Like that was actually the Mono Green deck for the longest time, right? It was a Tifa combo deck.
Yeah. But that was like, that's not like the Mono Green aggro. That's like Mono Green meme, right? Like, that's pretty much Infect.
It was pretty Infect-y, but still, Infect's a green deck, right?
Sure.
All right. And then we move on to the most controversial set of the year. Probably the worst set in many people's opinions. Spider-Man, right? The set single-handedly ruined Universes Beyond, right? Final Fantasy single-handedly, like, broke every record. Everyone's like, oh my goodness, like, all these $1,000 collector boosters. And after Spider-Man, everything came back down. Everything came back down. I'm actually curious.
It fixed the magic market.
Either Drift or Spider-Man would probably be in contention for worst set of the year. What do you guys land on that after all is said and done?
Those are my two worst sets of the year. Like, those I rank pretty far below all the rest of the other four of the year. For me personally, Spider-Man is the worst of the two just because of, like, the change at the last minute, the small set size, the pick two draft, like, so many spider people. At least Aether Drift, like, has the normal structure and, like, you could draft it normally. So I think it's some of those structure issues would make me rank Spider-Man as, like, the last one.
I do have Aether Drift. I think that I actually liked a lot of the sets this year. I just think that there's got to be a worst, and if I'm picking a worst, it's somewhere between Aether Drift and, get this, my spicy take is that I think it's Tarkir is the other one.
Ooh, interesting.
And that's going to sound blasphemous, but it is... I do think that the omission of the Dragon Lords, I know in the lore they do the whole thing to beat the Dragon Lords, and that's why they're not here, but they essentially got off-screened, right? And that is not great. When I think the nostalgia factor that I wanted from Tarkir was not there. And then on top of that, the wedges just really did not matter to me. Corey Steelcutter is the only thing that mattered that came out of that, right? and that's all we were allowed to think about in Standard. So... I think that, and I think Aether Drift are the two that just didn't hit for me.
I actually kind of agree, Richard, with Crib, now that Crib mentioned. Like, Aether Drift and Spider-Man, like, they had a purpose, and they kind of flopped. But, like, Dragonstorm was kind of just the safe, same old, right? So, it was, like, okay, but, like, I didn't have that nostalgia hit that, like, everyone else had, like, returning to Tarkir. So if I was like, okay, next year, here's your slate of things, I'd rather them try another Aether Drift or Spider-Man than put out another Tarkir. So in that sense, I agree. But objectively, I think the mechanics in Spider-Man sucked compared to Dragonstorm, right? I think pick two, disaster. The biggest issue for me, actually, is the lack of IP on Arena. I did not want to play that much Omen Path 1 on Arena, whereas I would have drafted a lot more Spider-Man. I will say, though, of cards I just bought to add to my collection because I had, there's like no purpose for them, like Spider-Man is probably up there, right? Like, I probably bought the most cards from Spider-Man and Final Fantasy, of just cards that I'm probably never going to play with. They never see a home, but I like the way it looks. I like the way it is, and I'm just going to put it in here, and I might force them into my decks for like no reason other than I like the cards, right? So
Richard's got a whole pile of Beglin Schmears, hot dog cards.
I got the sagas, bro. Okay. The sagas look so good. And then, you know, the best part about everyone hating the set is I can snap up those comic book covers, right? I'm like, oh, no one wants them. I want them. Right, so I can put them next to my Marvel Legends display. It's like awesome. I got like the Spider-Man, I got the flip card, I got like the Maximum Carnage saga. I thought Maximum Carnage would be a lot more expensive, by the way. Apparently not everyone played the Super Nintendo red cartridge game like I did, right? But I think it was fine. But gameplay I think was pretty mediocre. Pick two. I don't know if they should have done
painful.
That. I think.
And the Arena thing is a really good point to bring up. That's such a bummer. That was such a letdown to not get to play with any of that on Arena.
Yeah, it was brutal.
Yeah. It might actually do the opposite. I might actually install Marvel Snap. I'm like, Marvel Superheroes coming out. I'm like, fuck. I kind of want to play with some of these cards, you know? I'm like, oh, maybe just play Marvel Snap, right? Like, I don't know. It's kind of like doing the opposite of what it's supposed to be doing. So let's see, was there even, the only hit has to be like,
what would the hit be from this?
The Reanimator Spider-Man, right? Town?
Speaking of spells, I gotta ask you about another card, Grim.
I know you brought this one up, and I think this card's actually kind of overrated, but I want to hear your take on it, and it's Spider Scent. So when I read this card, at first I was like, oh, that's pretty sweet. It's like a counter spell, I can cast it for one mana, but then I was like, ah, it's not a negate, it doesn't get Prof's Eidetic Memory, it doesn't get Agatha's Soul Cauldron, it only gets Incidents and Sorceries. I think I'd rather just play Negate because it gets those things. But I'm curious, what do you think of this card? And I think it could be good in Commander, by the way. But
being able to, like, let's just say, send back a Tishana's Tidebinder.
So we're looking at reusing ETB shenanigans. Yeah.
I think that's good enough. And for only one mana, it's a low mana value investment. I think a lot of these cards will play nicely when we get into what is Wizard's actual vision of what 3-year standard looks like.
I will say that a lot of my criticism of the card is just how it lines up with the current meta and not being great against Cauldron decks because it doesn't hit all the non-creature spells. So I think you're right that this could certainly have a purpose in Standard at some point in the future. Yeah. All right.
That future is sooner than we thought. And it didn't matter because it played exactly where it loves playing, at one mana. And a lot of this meta in general, at one mana.
It's kind of hard for me to even consider this a hit. Like, sure, it's like occasionally a one or two of in the sideboard, but like, is that really the best the set had to offer? Was
no,
was
there's
two
other
on the sideboard?
There's other cards, but I do think that Spider Sense is the card that broke through other formats as well.
That is,
it is,
that
a
is
strong
true.
Enough.
That is the one that saw the most like modern play or whatever. It does see some fringe modern play for sure.
Like, yeah, like I think it is a strong sideboard piece and answer in that department. But I think I'm curious if we even mentioned the card that the one of the best cards from the set. At
yeah,
least
we have,
speak standard. You know,
we have two omissions, but I want to say, okay. Like looking at this card in hindsight, oh, the flavor is so bad. Like, why is web slinging on here? What does web slinging have to do with his spider sense? Like, you're actually just countering a spell, but I feel spider sense should be like, look at your hand, you know, like so you can actually predict something going on. Like, so looking back,
but you are
after
saving
Avatar,
yourself from danger. Like,
yeah, right? But then why can't you do an activated ability? Like, why are you countering like very specific things? Like,
because you can't count Stifle of Fetchland. That would be too powerful.
And I'm just like, the web slinging really kills it, right? Because he doesn't have spider sense because he web slings, right? Web slinging is just this other thing that's going on. So looking back, especially after the flavor of Final Fantasy and Avatar, I'm kind of like, man, this card's kind of But okay, let's see what our first omission is. I mean, how many omissions can we possibly have from Spider-Man? Let's see.
We also got a new Demure Spider-Man in Superior Spider-Man.
Yeah, that one,
so Superior
yes.
Spider-Man,
that makes sense.
It's kind of like a spark double, kind of like a body double. It essentially just clones something from the graveyard. The biggest issue with this card is the one place that body double is seen play, the clone from the graveyard effect, is in combos. But all those combos involve copying the same thing again and again and again from your graveyard, where you're like body double a Karmic Guide and sacrifice it to Viserys and copy it again and just keep looping for infinite triggers. That doesn't work with Superior Spider-Man because you got to exile the card from the graveyard. So this seems like a fair version of body double. It's like body double with no combo potential. It is cute that it gets around the legend rule. You can get multiple VVs on the battlefield. Let's say if you already have one and then you play Superior Spider-Man exiling one from the graveyard, the new VV that you make is actually going to be named Superior Spider-Man. And that's what the legend rule actually cares about, is having two legends with the same exact name. So keeping its name does kind of let you get around the legend rule, which is cute. So Superior Spider-Man, meh, it's a clone from the graveyard. It's fine. I don't think
it was like the only Spider-Man card that saw play, right?
There's another. There is another.
There's another? Wait, maybe
yeah,
it's
there is
omission
another.
Number two.
We have omission number two. Is it the last card you're talking about? But yeah, what do you think about Superior Spider-Man?
I mean, yeah. Superior.
Yeah. I think I underestimated the power of being able to get cast triggers with the card. That's something that I didn't take into consideration. Like, in Standard, being able to get the cast trigger of, like, the big living death creature, actually a pretty powerful effect. So it gave it a home, and it had the right synergy pieces for it. It still is kind of a body double without the combo potential, though. That was not wrong, but we just had the right pieces to make it work in Standard. And it is legitimately, like, the best card from the set, I think, as far as the amount of play it's seeing.
I mean, it definitely is a that minor thing of getting the cast is all the difference and what makes it so good, right? And it kind of can also serve as this backup, oh god, I need to hate out your like combo piece from the graveyard, so I'll just eat your whatever. Superior Spider-Man eats whatever's in your yard as opposed to mine. So it is nice in that department.
Yeah, I think the moral of the story, so wizards often put safeguards on their broken spells, like so like things like that can copy cast triggers. I think we need to look at, like, especially, right? Because they make it a cast trigger so you can't reanimate from the yard to get an ETB to do the thing. But if you can find some other way to cheat it, like Superior Spider-Man, then it's it warrants a second look. Right. Yeah. So I think we got to be super careful with the exact wording Wizards puts on other things, because if you don't get the cast trigger, the card is significantly weaker.
Oh, yeah. Then it's unplayable. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Second omission. Apparently, there's another playable Spider-Man card.
I'm curious what this is. We also got an intriguing new build around in Jackal Genius Geneticist.
There
it is. This card can do some really explosive things. It kind of reminds me of Taunus the Toymaker, Volo Guide to Monsters. If you want to go super deep, Riku with two reflections, but you got to pay mana for that, so it's not exactly the same. So the twist with Jackal is it's just way cheaper than the other commanders that do this. Jackal is just two mana, so it's a huge discount compared to other versions of this effect. But it comes with another downside, which is it's going to be a little tricky to use. You need the right mana value of creature to trigger it, and then you need the right mana value again the next turn, so it's going to be tricky to chain all that stuff together, and that makes me a little skeptical of this card, because we've seen cards in the past, like Imminent Doom, where people are kind of hyped about the card, but when you need to have, like, a 1-mana value play into a 2-mana value play into a 3-mana value play into a 4-mana value play, once you start playing those cards in practice, you find out they're just really tricky to use. When it works...
Jackal.
I don't even know
who Jackal is from the comics. Who is this?
I don't know who Jackal is, but I do know he's playing the Badger Mold Cub deck. It was one of those Simic cards, and I think I still stand by the fact that cards where you have to go 1-drop into 2-drop into 3-drop into 4-drop are generally not good. I think this is the first case where one has been good, and I think the reason is they just don't care past playing a 1-drop and a 2-drop. You just play a million 1-drops, you play Badger Mole Cub at 2, and you're just like, okay, like, I copy 2 things, and that's good enough with this card. So I think that's maybe I was looking at it as something that was too much of, like, a build-around, when in this case, they just don't really care. It's just like, yeah, I get it up to a 3-3, I copy 2 things. One of them's Badger Mole Cub, I win the game on turn 3, so.
Yeah, and it also kind of helped play nicely with, like, some of the offspring cards, like whatever that rabbit is, because then you don't have to pay the additional 2.
Paw Patch Recruit, maybe?
Yeah. Paw Patch Recruit. You don't have to pay the additional 2 for the offspring. You just pay the 1 and you already get that. And that's huge enough, right? You don't really need much more than that. And in a deck with, you know, Badger Mole Cubs, getting an additional Mana Dork, an Elvish Mystic, or something like that is big.
Yeah. No, that is definitely true. Yeah. I think that's, I mean, those are probably the 2 best cards from the set at this point, I would say. For
but you, bonus points, there's a third card that was at the Worlds, and it was Gwen Stacy into Ghost Spider with Chico. That was sick!
That was cute. I think also it ended up like 2-5 or something, but it was no.
It did not. No, look, I'm not going to let Spider-Man go down as the set that just is painted as no cards were played from it. I think people want to omit that intentionally.
And you got to remember, it only had a tiny amount of cards. So the fact that it's got cards seeing play is like mathematically harder for that set. So I think that's a good thing for Spider-Man.
Yeah. Spider-Man's interesting. I'm curious where it ends up, because right now everyone is super down on it. So does it just spiral down and become like Fallen Empires, essentially? Or like 5 years from now, everyone's like, oh my goodness, right? Like, why didn't we get any of these Spider-Man cards, right? It's crazy, right? So I'm curious if the sentiment turns around or kind of snowballs, because we do have Marvel superheroes coming down the pipe. We have another unnamed Marvel set coming down the pipe. So is this the start of the train wreck, or do the ladder sets pull it around and everyone's like, oh my god, I should have bought some of that Spider-Man stuff, right? So I'm curious
it's
where
so
this all goes.
That it, like, I guess yes. Like, does it, you know what I mean? It's like 10 cents for some of these cards.
Yeah. They are pretty cheap, and at least we know there's going to be synergies for, like, villains and heroes and so forth with the future Marvel set, so I wouldn't be surprised if, like, a few years from now people look at it differently. We saw that with, what, Commander Legends Baldur's Gate, where, like, it was very not well received when it first launched, and then, like, 2 years later, everyone's like, oh my god, this set's actually, like, kind of a banger. So, it could.
Yeah, right. I'm definitely in that camp.
Last set of the year, Avatar, The Last Airbender, my favorite set of the year, my favorite
me too
franchise of the, I have, if we could just stitch together the whole podcast, right? I started with like, wow, this is a kid's show. Everyone's like, no, Richard, watch it. And I watched like a season, I'm like, this is still garbage. I watched a second season, I'm like, wow, this is complete BS. Like, why are you guys like doing this to me? And then it finally turned around at like, you know, halfway through season 2. And since then, I have become an Avatar fanatic, right? I have this is my second most drafted set of all time after Final Fantasy, even though I kind of think the set is kind of medium now. But I have watched all of Avatar. I watched the live action. I'm watching Legend of Korra right now. I'm like halfway through.
Yeah.
give me more Avatar content, you know? Yeah, let's go, right? So it's kind of crazy, and this is all because of the game, right? Like, I would not...
Yeah.
I would seriously not recommend this series to anyone if they did not play, you know, Magic the Gathering.
Really?
If we were to sit down, I'm like, let me recommend you, like, 10 animes or 10 shows to watch. I don't think Avatar would crack it unless you were, like, literally, like, watching with your 7-year-old kid, right? So it would not crack it in that sense. But if you are a Magic player that has played with the Avatar cards, this would be one of the first things I recommend that you watch. And I really enjoyed it.
And it actually does make the Magic set better. Like, usually yes. I'm the one that doesn't know anything about the IP from the Universes Beyond, but this one I actually watched the show and got to know it. And now I've noticed when I play a draft or something, like, the connections to the scenes from the show and the characters actually make it, like, somewhat more enjoyable. So it's working. It worked on that one.
All right. Let's see what our hit. Oh, this is labeled hit and miss simultaneously. Oh, so one of us will look incredibly intelligent and one of us will look incredibly dumb.
And I'm curious what you guys think about this card, because I'm really, really high on this card. And when I talk to people about it, like,
Crim, cover your ears.
Crazy. That's Accumulate Wisdom. It wasn't that long ago that Anticipate was a card that people actually played in decks. Maybe it was like 10 years ago now, but there was a time.
It was a long time ago.
When people get you to bed, Grandpa. We're trying to play Anticipate in 2025.
But what if your Anticipate actually is a 2-mana Ancestral Recall that has to be good, right? So we have a lot of good lessons in Standard. I'm curious, what do you guys think? Is this card just going to hard flop? Is this just like a limited card? Or do you think we'll actually be casting Accumulate Wisdoms in Standard?
Right now, at least I don't know what deck you're envisioning this going in. You can't have that much fluff, right? Eventually, you got to have something to draw into that isn't just another draw spell.
So we're going to put a bunch of mediocre cards in our deck to make our mediocre card passable.
like
there's no lesson you actually want to, like, if there was an actual like lesson Doomblade and you're like, I want to play this with no synergies, then we could be talking. But like, you're not gonna play Abandoned Attachment. Like, there's no way you're doing that, and you're just skipping your turn by doing a 2-mana Anticipate.
I'm sure there's a world where you could get it to fire off by turn 3 or 4. It's just you'll be loaded with a bunch of lessons, right?
Yeah.
So
look at this. You draw 3 cards, but all you did was draw 3 more lessons. Now what do you do?
All right.
To be fair, there's a miss baked. I think we were actually right, Krim. And we're gonna double down right here.
Whoa.
I think we were right in that because we missed Boomerang Basics, right? Like, Boomerang Basics is one of the best cards in Standard. And if we knew that, then I think we would be a lot higher on Accumulate Wisdom, right? Because then you play 4 Firebending Lessons, 4 Combustion Techniques, and 4 Boomerang Basics. Because they're the best cards in the format, then this is just free Ancestral Recall. But we were envisioning 8 good lessons and, like, random garbage. And we're like, that random garbage is not worth it, right? So I think we had the right train of thought, Krim. Just we missed Boomerang Basics.
Maybe Iroh's demonstration, too.
I did not think Boomerang Basics would be as good as it was. Like, Accumulate Wisdom was entirely dependent on the lessons, right? And, like, a lot of them seem kind of bad, but they are even playing Abandoned Attachment, so this whole thing
is bad. Because they're playing Iroh's Demonstration, they're playing Abandoned Attachment, so I don't know, Krim, maybe we just straight up wrong.
So what that means is we're going, Richard and I are going on the Apology World Tour.
I feel like that's actually kind of a tough one, though, because you're kind of betting on the entire archetype, right? Because the lessons are either going to succeed or fail together. So if you think the rest of the lessons suck, of course, Accumulate's also going to suck because you need the rest of the lessons to be good. So I think it's actually, like, an obvious mistake. I just, like, see card draw and I'm like, oh, it's going to be good. And this time I got lucky and it actually was good. But I'm sure there's a bunch of times when I said the same thing and it never worked out. So
we also missed Grand, right? Not just about a card, but an entire archetype. So
it's like the opposite of the Circle of Loyalty when I thought Knights was going to be good. So I was really high in that. So this time the archetype actually worked out for once. So.
All right. Well, we got a hit. This one just says hit, so we should look good here. Let's see. Earthbending, I feel, is the number 2 mechanic behind firebending because Wizards loves to print things that say non-land permanent. And when you earthbend, you're still a land, so you can't flood maw these things. Badger, Mole, Cub. This thing seems nuts. I don't know. You just made 2 bodies for 2 mana. And you don't have any down. There's no downside here, right? They kill your land. It comes back. You still have a 2/2. They kill this thing. You still have a 1/1 land. If you go elf into this, You can potentially have like a like two extra mana to do something with as well. So there's a lot of value here, and maybe this will save us from the mono red meta because you just power your way up. There's no screaming nemesis to you know kill your you know make your 5/5 blocker like useless, right? So you can just power up, go into the big stuff, and then go to town.
Yeah, I mean, there is already a deck I would probably try this in, right? The Simic Aggro deck. It plays on the curve, nice, right? And then on top of that, it allows you, you can like copy this, and then you get to double air like Earthbend pretty quick with Jackal, right? The Simic, that Simic deck gets some really explosive starts. So I think this card could go in there.
Oh, yeah, this card, I think this card's insane. I think it can go in the Simic deck. I think it can go in mono green decks. Like, just a... It adds 3 power and toughness to the battlefield and 2 bodies, and you get this huge upside with Earthbending or with Mana Dorks, as Richard said. I also think if Earthbending exists as an actual deck, and I think it could, there's some other good Earthbending cards, like Boomy Unleashed, I think is a really powerful 5 drop. This ramps into it pretty quickly.
We gotta cut the clip.
Make me stop talking.
Wait. Stop it.
I mean... I feel like that was not a very hard prediction to see Badger Mole Cub being good. I think we all, like, immediately, once we read the text on that, it was just like, how could it not be? Like, there's not many ways that card's not good. Like, its stats are good, its ability is good, and we were right.
I mean, down to, like, even, like, the shell, right? Like, exactly
yeah.
where it
oh,
goes.
Oh, you nailed it with Simic, yeah.
It plays perfectly, and it's just such a strong card. I just didn't think they would go to spawn, like... I think Badger Mole Cub and Ouroboroid are single-handedly just carrying the color green. Like the they are the poster children of green right now. If you play a green deck, you play those.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about this. So, you know, remember when the set first came out, green was everywhere and everyone's like, "Oh my goodness, yeah. Call for a banning," right? Like, what do you mean if I don't have a single removal spell on turn 2, I'm like toast. And after the meta is all shaken up and whatever, it's like an okay card. It's like in decks. It's like sitting on the fringes of tier 1. But the play pattern, I need to know how many arena frowny faces this thing gets, right? Because it's one of those like removal check cards. And if you don't have the removal, like you die. But you die in a spectacular fashion. So maybe you're not that salty. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like you just die. You're like... Whoa, dude, he just made like 80 power worth of stuff. You know, that's kind of cool, bro. Like, maybe that's okay. That like makes it better, but it's one of those removal check cards. And I don't know how I actually feel about that in terms of how the games, you know, should play out, right? Because you stumble for a second and then you're just dead to this. But if your deck is working as intended, it's a blowout in the other direction, right? So I don't know where we end up with this, but it's an interesting design choice that Wizards put this in the format with Lana War Elf.
Mark it down. This card will still get banned in Standard. I will still plant my flag. At some point in this card's life in Standard, I think it'll get banned.
Because it's broken or because of play pattern?
Because
I think play pattern.
I guess. Like, it's the play pattern's a problem, but part of the reason why the play pattern's a problem is because it's so strong. But I think at some point, it's hard for me to imagine this card is not, like, just gonna make people too miserable. Too many frowny faces.
But I do got to say, though, that it does feel real good when you play a Clarion Conqueror.
When you get them, oh, yeah. You Therize them, and they bounce all their lands. And you're like,
it feels
I might have lost the last 9
good.
Times, but this made it worth it.
I feel it gives people the Timmy power, so they're going to keep it. Like, yes, you get blown out of mine, but you get to do it too, right? You get to go elf. Cross your fingers, no removal, into Cub, into
Shrine. Like, I play a 5-drop Shrine or something. Like, it is a cheat code to make Jank work. Like, if you want to play a 5-drop, just Badger Mole Cub it out and you got a shot.
Can't we say that about Dark Ritual? Dark Ritual.
Oh, yeah, I guess
you.
That's fair. Yeah.
Like, we can say that, but people usually end up with nefarious reasons and it doesn't work out. But, all right. Last clip is labeled somewhat of a miss. What is this?
Hmm.
All right, we haven't power crept enough, so the owl itself is coming. Wan Shi Tong, librarian. What happened?
Was this a big character in the show, Krim? I don't even remember.
I don't even know who the owl was.
I don't even remember this owl.
I went back
like
and rewatched this episode.
Was it in the beach episode?
It wasn't like a main character, right? Like it was just like a one episode thing or something.
I love this card. I think this card is nuts.
I think this card might actually be borderline too good. Like I think this card is like obscene. Like it's ridiculously broken. Like in standard, as you said, it's Hydroid Crossus with flash, which is, yeah, you don't gain the life, but if you flash in during combat and block something, you gain a bunch of life off that anyway. Plus flash is just more powerful than gaining a bit of life, so you could split it in half and it would still be a staple in some format. And when you put all those abilities together, I think this is just like easily the best card in the set, not even close.
This might be the next Oko. Speed running its way to the top of the meta in literally every single format possible, and then eating a ban. This makes me not want to play Magic. You're like, what is the point? You know, like, why think, right? Just keep slamming these boys down, and like, it's too much. There's only one downside, and the one downside is it's legendary, but it's a must-kill threat that your opponent must kill anyway, so it doesn't even matter if you have extra copies in your hand. If it sticks on the board, you've won the game.
It's so crazy to me. Like, I was expecting them to have some really push, like, Aang or something. It just surprises me that this Owl is the card that they went ridiculously hard on. So, yeah, I'm kind of on the Richard end, where I think this card, if anything, it could be too good. It is hard for me to imagine this card not being...
All right, it's labeled as somewhat of a miss. Okay. where did this card end up?
Okay, it is played. It is good. It is not Oko. And it is not the reason why anyone would quit Magic. But at the same time, I do think the card is still very strong, right? Like, it is a very good card. And we have a lot of time until we can figure out if this is or is not playable. And in this current meta, outside of Vajimol Cup decks, it's hard to play mana sinks.
And, I mean, I'm just looking at the results of tournaments over the last few days, and there are, on the Moto results, you got finishes in Modern, in Vintage, in Standard, multiples of most of those, Legacy. So it really is showing up across formats. I think where we missed is, like, basically what Krim said. I don't think it's, like, Oko make people quit Magic good, but it legitimately is seeing play in basically every competitive format. And the set's still only, like, a month old, so give it a little time. We'll see where it ends up in Standard. Maybe in Standard there's just so much good card draw anyway with, like, lessons and stuff. I built some decks that have Accumulate in it and so forth, and I, like, could play Wan Shi Tong, and I'm like, do I need this? Do I even need to draw more cards? And I just end up cutting it. So I think maybe that's part of it, too.
Card draw too good.
Too much card draw. Overloaded.
I mean, like, the only deck that plays it in Standard is the Jeskai Control deck. And, like, it's not even, like, consensus, right? Like, half the decks don't even run it, right? They're like, enough Morang River Regents, I'm good, right? So, yeah, I think it's like, okay in Standard, but it gets play in older formats, right? Definitely not Oko, right? Oko dominated Standard and the older formats. But it's the owl, everyone's favorite owl. I'm so shocked. It was such a big story point that I'm so shocked that Seth didn't figure it out.
I went back and rewatched the episode.
He's even in Legend of Korra. That's how big he is. Right?
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Wow.
So
Richard's moving on to the next iteration of the Avatar. That's how hooked he is on Avatar.
No. Okay. You know. Okay. We're gonna take a little side note. In the live action, they actually take several episodes and mush them into one. In a way that kind of works. So they actually move Wan Shi Tong around and, like, have him appear in a different area than the anime. And then, spoiler alerts, shows up in Legend of Korra too. So this is a big bird. This is actually, in some way, transcends
big
the Avatar.
He needs a spinoff. We need a spinoff of Wan Shi Tong show.
Don't give wizards any ideas. That is the year. What did you guys think? What was your, like, favorite set? Anything memorable stand out? How is our six set standard here? Is it under wraps? We could have had a whole episode on BNRs. I think there was a lot of BNR activity in the past year. What do you guys think?
I will say, I feel like this was overall a very rough year for Standard, but I think the most hopeful part of the year is coming now at the end of the year. So I feel like maybe we're heading in the right direction going into 2026. I feel like, prediction-wise, we did fine. There were some hilariously big misses, but we also got some hits in there. So overall, I think our batting average wasn't too bad prediction-wise. But I would say, yeah, rough year overall, but maybe trending in the right direction heading into next year.
I mean, I think this as a year just for like standard, it's not that bad, right? It's not like the worst years I've ever played. I think that somewhere this is like middling, right? Like it's hard to go from how good it was into a middling year. So then it always feels that much worse in the moment because of recency bias. But I promise you when we look back in years, it just feels like, I don't know, this is still not like a top five worst format for me. And then on top of that, I don't know. I like this. I think the six sets, believe it or not, I felt like was very streamlined. As someone who plays other card games, it's very nice to not have to worry about, oh, but there's set 1B in between, like, you know, two, and all these random things in along the way, or Modern Horizons 69-420. I don't know. Whatever. I just like that there were these six sets, and I knew that was it, right? There may have been an overabundance of, like, secret layers, but I do think it's nice that there's just these six sets that I had to focus on. And I think Final Fantasy is the clear-cut favorite for me for this year. I don't even think there's even close of an impact as a set that has as much impact as like Final Fantasy did for Magic this year. And I'm talking on every front, you know, top five draft format, big in Commander, obviously affected Standard to the point where my favorite character is the poster child of either somebody's favorite year or worst year. And I don't know. I liked Magic this year. Believe it or not, I think that the reason we're all talking about Magic so much this year is because of how much we've grown. There's always something being talked about when it comes to Magic, whether negative or positive, and that's because we're getting more people, more voices into the game, and I think it was an overall big year for Magic.
Yeah, I thought it was a great year. Six sets.
Yeah.
Didn't seem too much. Maybe I'm saying that now as we got to unwind for like a couple weeks with no spoiler season, but like it didn't seem that much, and I will say I really enjoyed Universes Beyond in Standard. I told you guys my Avatar arc, right? But like the other things like Dungeons and Dragons, Doctor Who, Assassin's Creed, like we just never see them, right? Because they're only played in Commander. Maybe you build one Commander deck for it and you actually see it, but other than that, you don't get to interact with it. But I played hundreds or thousands of games with Avatar, Spider-Man, and Final Fantasy cards, so I really got to experience them, and I like the IPs. We're going to see how I feel when we get to like Star Trek.
I was going to ask you that. What if you don't like them?
I mean, I'm already dreading Turtles, and I'm a huge Turtles fan, right? But I was a huge Turtles fan as a child, right? I don't know if I want to be playing this, but I felt it was important. If Avatar was a Modern-only set or a Commander supplement, then I think it would have made no impact to me. I don't think I would have played with any of the cards. Like, I don't even know what the Eternal cards are from Avatar, right? Because I just don't get to draft with them. I don't get to play with them. So yeah. I actually thought Universes Beyond was a big win for the Standard environment. And I thought Standard was okay. Like, it was incredibly diverse, and the metagame was always up. It just happened to always settle back onto an Izzet deck. And, you know, we had a lot of bannings, and it was bad for your wallet. But if you actually looked at all the decks that saw play this year, you're like, actually, it was, like, reasonably diverse, right? I do think the big blunder was the pre-ban of Vivi, where they said we're going to ban it, like, in the future, but not today. And then that basically just killed Standard for, like, that next month or so. So yeah. I thought that was a big blunder.
I want to throw in that also this year with Universes Beyond, I will say the downside, though, that we're seeing now is that, remember, like, I think it was a couple years back, Standard decks were, like, maybe 250, 300. Yeah. I think we kind of knew this would kind of come into play here, but, like, when people want to just collect Magic cards and play, and then there's people that want to play with Magic cards, that's naturally going to drive the price up. So it is kind of unfortunate that, like, what, that Badger Mole, that Bant deck that everybody was building, the airbending one, was like $800 or something like that because of Badger Mole Cubs and all of that. So that is a big negative from Universes Beyond this year.
That is a big negative, and I would also hold Wizards' feet to the fire to some extent here, because part of it is, like, the secondary market, but they also did jack up MSRP for half the sets in Standard this year, which is other part of it, is they're actually, like, charging more to the wholesalers to get it out. So part of it's on Wizards, I think, along with along with the scalpers and all that kind of stuff. The other thing I would say, Richard, is like, yeah, Standard had ended up with a bunch of decks, but that's only kind of because we had a record amount of bannings. Like, could you imagine if they didn't ban anything this year, which is their focus and plan for Standard? It would have been one deck all year, right? Like, it would have literally just been Cutter for 12 months until the end.
Yeah, but I expect that to be the norm going forward.
Okay.
Do you think there will be no bannings next year? I think every ban window, there will be a large number of cards banned. And we are beyond the point of, like, natural balance, right? Wizards will forcibly balance your decks for you, right? So I feel I'm fine with that.
If they do, I hope they do. Like, if that's what they do, I'm on board with that. Ban stuff all the time, as far as I'm concerned.
It kind of works.
I mean, they have to.
Because if you played Izzet and they banned Cutter, you could play Vivi, and they banned Vivi, you play Looting, and, like, your deck
still
actually kind of survived. So yeah. Even though it feels bad, I mean, but if you bought a playset of Vivis, you're out a ton of money, right? So maybe this is not
unless
good
you
at
love
all,
Vivi.
Right?
I do want to say, though, on top of that, though, I do think that next year, though, I'm curious about this because I think Standard actually might power down, right? I think they have to power down.
Hmm. They need to ban more cards out of these sets to make sure the power down cards can play with them.
I mean,
it's hard for me to see how they do it.
Okay, maybe that's more of wishful thinking. I'd like for them to power down.
Yeah.
Just because I honestly feel like we talked about, do you need, like a last podcast, a couple podcasts ago, do we need to actually push Universes Beyond, right, to like sell? So if Universes Beyond going, like this would now be year two of Universes Beyond being in Standard, I assume that those sets will sell just fine normally. So maybe the in-universe sets will just match of whatever power level like Star Trek and superheroes and all of that is.
I think one of the challenges with powering down in 3-year Standard, though, is you don't just have to match the sets from next year. You got to match Final Fantasy and Avatar and whatever is coming 3 years in the future that we don't know about, which that's the part that makes it seem hard for me to then power down with just having so many sets, because what do you do if you make it weak next year? Doesn't Avatar and Final Fantasy just dominate everything from next year and you don't see any of those sets anyway in Standard?
Well, I think Final Fantasy and Avatar, as of right now, are perfectly balanced. So you mean make them on the power level
of like Avatar?
Right. Like, I think they're all just going to match that power level because remember, we're coming from dying on turn three, right? Like, so I think. If you're telling me the rest of next year matches Final Fantasy and Avatar, I like that.
Okay. If you mean power down is like as powerful as Avatar, then sure, I think that's realistic. I thought you meant like we're going back to like doing some Ixalan or Dragon's Maze or something where
we're actively trying
to make Standard like slow down, you know, be a little bit weaker.
We have a different definition of power down. Like if you're not dead on turn three, but your opponent has drawn six extra cards. Like, did that really count? You know what I mean? Like, did that really count, right? So, I don't know. I think you actually have to actively power it down, right? Because we are at the point where anything above 3 mana is unplayable, right? The majority of your curve needs to be 1 mana. And you need to be able to interact with, like, big threats at 1 mana, right? Meaning, like, if someone drops a 4-4, your 1-mana spell needs to be able to take care of it, right? So I don't see how we could power creep even further. You know what I mean? Like, and we already have, like, turn 3 combo wins and things like that in Standard. So we need to power down to get a differentiation between this and, like, Modern and, like, Vintage
legacy.
And things like Legacy, right? Like, we are so high-powered, and the only thing lacking is, like, high-powered answers. You know what I mean? But adding them doesn't help, right? It just makes it even faster, right? Because right now, the high-powered answers are not equally distributed, right? And the high-powered card draw is not equally distributed. But I think you gotta, like, we have Ancestral Recall in the format. Like, literally, right? Like, we gotta tone that down, right? Otherwise, your creatures will all be, like, Ragavan plus, right? 1 mana, 3-1, ward 2. If it hits you, you lose half your life. Can't gain life for the rest of the game, right? Like, that's the only way to keep up with all of this, right? So
we gotta
power down.
I still feel like the most realistic power down is just less sets in Standard. Like, keep them relatively powerful, but just have them leave quicker.
I mean, we need to see
Dustmourne. We go back to that.
Duskmourne, Bloomburrow, all of those need to rotate. That won't happen for like 2027.
Yeah, we still have a long time to go.
That's what I mean when I say, like, I want to see the standard that Wizards envisions, because I do not think those sets were designed with 3 years in mind, right? Like, those were two-year standard designs.
Our bad the problem list is like just 10 cards their mind, long. So, yeah, we're like totally off the plan, right? Like, now we're just winging it, all right? Like, there's
they
no
just
way
change their mind
it.
So much. Like, we wait another 2 years to see their plan, and then they'll announce some other change in between, and then we're like, oh, we got to wait 3 more years, and then we just do this forever.
They should have just fast-tracked it. I think a lot more should have just rotated at the past rotation, the one that just happened.
I actually think that's where they went wrong. If they wanted to do 3-year standard, I think they needed to just, like... Yeah, they needed to announce it ahead of time and, like, actually plan for the rotation and what sets were in it rather than just doing it haphazardly. So I think the error was, like, 3 years ago. But it'll be interesting to see. My other question for you before we wrap up this long podcast. I know everyone's hyped about Universes Beyond this year, but when you look ahead at next year's slate, do you think it's going to be – you're going to be as hyped about playing with the Universes Beyond in standard when it's, like – Turtles, Superheroes, A Return to Lord of the Rings, Star Trek as the four Universes Beyond sets and not Final Fantasy, Avatar, Spider-Man.
Is Return to Lord confirmed? Is Return to Lord
or,
of the Rings?
I don't know. What's it called? The Hobbit. Yeah, The Hobbit.
It's
the
Hobbit.
Sequel,
it's Hobbit.
So.
Yeah. Hobbit. Well, I already don't like Lord of the Rings. I definitely don't like The Hobbit. and then I don't know Star Trek. So I'm not a Trekkie. So next year, it's uncharted territory for me because I'm very curious about the stuff I don't know, right? All the stuff they've done recently, I do know. And I'm also like 99% sure I can ride the high of Lorwyn and Marvel superheroes into like 2030. So
those,
like,
are going to cover it. Yeah.
Like, unless they suck, which would then make me very sad, but like, I'm very excited for Lorwyn and Marvel next year. Those are the sets that I cannot even like stop shaking over. And then maybe Reality Fracture is cool because they're like, you know, teasing a bunch of cool, innovative things. Yeah, I'm intrigued. So Universes Beyond specifically next year, I only know one of the IPs, or at least enjoy one of the IPs.
Yeah, I think next year is going to be rough. I'm a Turtles fan, but I just do not see how this will work. It's going to be Return to New York City. And I already know from Spider-Man, like, that's not the vibe we kind of want, even though they're literally mutant Ninja Turtles, right? Like, we actually... I remember on the early seasons of Clash, I actually played a Turtles deck, right? You know, but like, it's different when it's like force-fed down your mouth. And then Star Trek, I didn't like Edge of Eternities. I feel Star Wars is on theme because Star Wars has more fantasy elements as a sci-fi than something like Star Trek, right? And Edge kind of went the Star Trek-y direction. It's more hardcore science fiction rather than the there's a force, right? And, you know, there's all these mystical elements.
Magic.
Right? So I'm not a fan of it, but we'll see. Maybe next year I'll be a Trekkie. Maybe I'll renounce my
out,
Star Wars
Richard.
Citizenship.
I mean,
maybe this is a good thing, though. I know this is an unpopular opinion, but I do not want Magic to just continue to stay in the realm of high fantasy. And every time we've sprinkled out and tiptoed our way out of there, we've gotten some really cool stuff, right? Like, Neon Dynasty is not high fantasy. Innistrad is horror. So, like, I really liked Edge of Eternities, and I kind of like that we're doing more than just high fantasy, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, but there's a reason I haven't watched any Star Trek in the last, like, 25 years, right? It doesn't interest me, right? So kind of being forced it, I don't know that it helps. Turtles has nostalgia. I think Hobbit might be weak sauce. I don't know. Depends on what direction they go with it. But Hobbit will just be more Lord of the Rings. And I don't know if we really need that, right? Especially since we have some of the cards in the original Lord of the Rings already. But I'm really worried about Turtles and Star Trek. And then next year, I think we'll also get the announcements for the following year. And we'll see how far off the rails we get. Is that when State Farm comes into play, you know what I mean? Like
a good neighbor.
remember, we didn't talk about this, but The Office Secret Lair happened this year, right?
Yeah.
I think that was kind of a eyebrow-raising moment. Was SpongeBob this year or was it last year?
That was this year.
That was this
but
year.
SpongeBob,
yeah.
Like, I get meme culture, but like, The Office? You know? And that's like a little eyebrow-raising. So do we get The Office in standard? Is that happening? Like, what's going on, right?
Okay. I don't think there's any world where they give. Okay, I don't want to. You know, fingers crossed. I don't think there's a world where
We're gonna have this on the highlight show for next episode. Yeah.
And if they're gonna do that, you damn well better give me an Arrested Development.
Arrested Development is one of my favorite shows. I still wouldn't want a standard set out.
I wouldn't want a secret lair.
Yeah, I would take a Buster Blue secret lair drop. Yeah,
yeah.
No. Did you all get the Dwight card set for your troll deck? I need to avoid playing you like the plague.
Dude, it is funny, man. Like, it is really cringe, but it is funny.
It is, yeah. It is cringe, but it is. It could be funny. I could see it being funny, but it'll be interesting to see where we end up last year. One thing I'm confident of, next year is going to be a wild year, just with so many sets and so much going on. If you like a lot of stuff happening and just something to be in tune with all the time, Magic's going to have quite the year next year. So.
I don't like that, by the way. I don't like that we're going up to 7 sets. I am worried about 7 sets.
Yeah.
Now we're pushing
But it's okay because we didn't have Horizons. We didn't have Commander Supplemental. Because those were discarded, yes, there's impact to Standard, but overall, I feel like we didn't have more products. It's kind of the same number of products. It's just they're all shoved into Standard now
Balance
is a concern. I think having more sets in Standard is actually a positive. Out of all the formats, it's the one that could most use, I think, more frequent shakeups. So that part's actually kind of good. But anyway, I think that brings us to the end of our year-end podcast. So let us know what you think. You've heard all of our wonderful takes and horrible takes. What did you get right and wrong next year? What do you think's happening in 2026? Let us know in the comments. And thanks for listening this year. And we will be back next week and also next year to talk about whatever is going on in Magic. So until then, have a wonderful week, everyone. And this is the crew signing off.